What's going on, everybody? This is another episode of Investor's Journey podcast, and we decided to make things a little more fun by answering questions while having a nice little glass of scotch. So today's pour is a bottle of Glenlivet.
If that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah. So just cracked it open. Had a few sips already, so it should be fun. On this podcast, as you heard, John Barr is with us, and we're going to be talking about liens. We had an investor reach out, had some trouble with liens, and they wanted to know how it is that we deal with them. So we're going to kind of share how it is that we work with liens, how we work with title company, and our whole point of view when it comes time to dealing with them. To get started,
without further ado, we'll kind of jump into here. So now, like, the first thing you go over for people, I know we have people of all experience levels that listen to our show. Like, what is a lien, and what do we say when you hear that term? So whenever you get a property under contract, the first thing you need to do is you need to send it to a title company. And the point of the title company is to do a title research on who owns that property and make sure nobody else has any claim to that property versus when it comes to the finances. So like a mortgage, that's a lien. It's usually a first lien, superior to a lot of other liens, but a lot of times there's a lot of other things that can attach to a title that people refer to as liens, or judgments are another common thing that we find on a lot of properties that we run through title. So when you hear the term lien, that's what it is, that there's somebody else has a claim to money from either the property or the person that owns the property, and they want to try to collect money by that asset when it does sell. And that's the job of the title companies, to find those things to make sure that when you buy a house, that somebody doesn't come after you and say, hey, you sold this property to so and so, we want that money. And then you say, well, already sold the property, go after them. It's not how it works. They can come after you and try to get payment from you. So the point of the title company is to find all those liens and give you what's called title insurance. And they are ensuring that upon closing and funding that there are no liens against the property, or if there are, they're being paid off at the time of closing. And so that's the background of liens and what they really are.
And that's why on every property, even when you're a wholesaler, when we wholesale deals, we still do title work. We still get a lot of wholesalers that will come to us and bring us a deal not having done any title work or anything, and hoping to pretty much offload the deal to me with possibly liens attached to it, right? So, I mean, at the end of the day, you can't depend on them. You got to do your own due diligence. But that is why having proper title work is very, very important. I mean, keep in mind that you're dealing with sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars. You got to take this serious, and liens are very serious. So that being said, that was a good explanation from John as to the different types. So we're going to break down a little bit further between liens that are on the person versus liens are on the property and how to go about them. So where would you like to start? I mean,
and a lot of the liens, some of them can be removed and some of them can't be. But that's why we talk a lot with a lot of people and use the adage, like, you need to work with your title company to get these things removed. You can't just say, here, Mr. Title Person Escrow Officer, figure out my problems, make the liens clear, and so I can buy it. And there's a lot of times, like, your deal is one of 100 deals in that title office at any given time. So they're not going to take yours over anybody else's. So you need to work with them on that. So when you get your title commitment back, you're going to look down at Schedule C, and it will explain a little further of what's against that property, or ask your escrow officer when they send that back to you, hey, is there any liens against this property? So something that can't be removed from the house prior to closing are like your first and second lien mortgages. That means the bank has lent the money to them and they want a payoff and they want their money back. So you're not going to be able to buy a house with that attached if you're not doing a subject to. So you need to get that paid off, or at least a payoff from that, so you know what it is that you're exactly buying. You can get tax liens against a property, and those do not go away. The government, municipalities will get their money one way or another. So that's something that's not going to be taken off. But dealing in the investment world, there's a lot of other liens that get attached to properties, and some come off, some don't. But that's why it's also working with a good title company, as especially one that's got a fee attorney attached. They might be able to really help you in getting some things taken on and off, and what needs to be paid and what doesn't need to be paid. So some of the ones that we run a lot into, is called AJs, abstract judgments. So now what is that? An abstract judgment is basically that person had debt at some point via credit card or car loan or whatever it may be, and the creditor has since sold that debt to somebody else because they just chalked it up as a loss. Somebody ran up their credit cards, didn't pay, didn't do anything, and they just said, you know what, for pennies on the dollar, you can somebody will buy that lien, and then they try to track these people down. So now they find this person via Social Security, driver's license, date of birth, whatever it is. They just throw a huge net out there saying, hey, we have a judgment against this Social Security number, this X person. Now, when they go, the title company does their title research, they don't pull just the property. They pull the owners of the property to see what claims are against that person. And if there's an abstract judgment against it, they're going to find that. And they're going to say, hey, we're trying to force payment on this. Mr. Title Company, you need to pay us. Now, you don't always have to pay that, though. In Texas, we have very good homestead laws. You cannot force payment on a abstract judgment against a homestead. Investment property, different story. We've never really run into that, but from what I understand, you're going to wind up paying that at closing, or somebody is going to be paying that at closing before the title company will give clear title. So we've run into a series of these, and as long as it's a homestead, you're good to go. The process of going about them, there's a formal way and informal way. I can't remember the exact date, but I think it's 2007 or 8. If the abstract judgment is past that date, you can get it removed on a homestead. But if it's prior to that, you need to work with your title company or an attorney to figure out if it can be removed or not. But one thing that I have done is once that comes back and you see that abstract judgment, you ask the title companies, like, hey, is there any kind of contact information for who owns that abstract judgment? And then I've literally just called the creditor. And a lot of times they'll ask Social Security number, an authorization or something like that. So call in with the seller, get that or whatever it is that they need, send it to them and let them know and just say, hey, you have an abstract judgment against a homestead. We need a partial release of lien. Now that's important. They're not releasing the lien against the person. They're just partially releasing the home that is attached that you're trying to buy because they can't force payment on that abstract judgment when you sell a homestead. So big difference there. You're just needing a partial release of lien against the home is all you're looking for. And then they'll know what you're talking about. If somebody's in this business, they'll play dumb with you and try to screw around with you and try to not notarize documents, but they know what you're talking about. So you can look up, I can't remember the actual property code number off the top of my head, but you can look up that property code. I think it's like 52-11 that says you can't force payment on a homestead, and actually gives you a step-by-step process on what it is that you need to do to get that properly released, or so the title company will say, hey, you've gone through all the necessary steps. We will now go through, give you title insurance based on that. And that can take a while. And I would highly suggest have an attorney help you go through that full process, or go with a title company that has a fee attorney attached. There's several of them around. To get that properly released so you know that it's getting done right. But that can take time. Another way you can do it is when you just call in and you recite the property code. You can just Google it and you can find it pretty easily. Just Google the question, can property or abstract judgments be forced on homestead in Texas? And you'll find articles and everything like that. And I've read them that paragraph, and they know exactly what you're talking about. And let them know, like, there's a court case that Tarrant Bank versus Miller that cited that creditors can be held liable for damages, meaning that if they force that property into foreclosure or cause damages because they're having to pay extra interest, you can't buy the property, taxes, whatever the person's situation is, they can go after that creditor for damages, saying you held up the sale of my property because you illegally would not give a partial release of lien. So that kind of usually scares the person into giving you what you need. So there's a couple ways that you can get those removed. So, John, you got anything?
And I mean, one thing that we experienced in one of the properties that we did that had one is that you're not dealing with a sophisticated bank or an entity along those lines when you're dealing with an abstract judgment. A lot of times it's individuals that just buy them up for pennies on the dollar. And they're taking a risk, hoping that eventually they can collect on that money. So don't feel, you know, intimidated or thinking that you're dealing with Bank of America when it comes to these abstract judgments, because the majority of the times they have been sold off to individuals that, like this gentleman, didn't know much about the laws and the regulations, and he kind of scared the crap out of him into letting go of all that shit.
And he did. I mean, he said the release, and we were able to get the property sold. So just because you got some abstract judgments against your title doesn't mean your deal's dead in the water. It just means that you're going to have to work a little bit. And being knowledgeable about these things and asking your sellers prior to taking the title if they're going to have any problems like this really helps move your deal along, because speed and efficiency is how a lot of times you wind up getting deals from other people.
So before we keep moving forward, one of the things, and this is something that we've seen a lot with John, is especially again with new wholesalers and stuff that we experience ourselves, is just because you're talking to somebody about selling the home doesn't mean there's somebody else with an interest in that home, right? So you got to figure out who else is on title, who else has the rights to that property. Because while the person that you're dealing with may be clean, the other person on that may not be, right? So you need to make sure you get all the parties that are on, that have a vested interest in that property by whatever means, you know, through marriage or what do they have here that you can, they live together for a certain
common law.
So, I mean, if they live together for a certain amount of time, those things really do matter, and they play into effect when it comes time to closing. And that's why title runs both their information, their social securities, all their past, everything, to make sure that both of their names. So make sure that whenever you get a property under contract, you have everybody that's on title, you know, all of their information. So title can do proper work. And this is where we go back to the same thing where people say, oh, I sent it to title, I'm done. No, you're not done. You got to work with your title company, because you can't depend on title to figure everything out and to get in contact with everything. You are that point of contact between the seller and title. And you are already working with the seller, already building that rapport. And if you let title handle it, they are, you know, that seller is just another docket for them. So it's not that title is, they're bad, it's just that they have a business to run and they're doing their thing. They're not gonna take as much care with the seller as you would. So don't just send it off to title and say, oh, they'll handle everything, because you're gonna create a lot more work and a lot more headaches for them. So put in the time and do the work right.
So some other types of liens that you can run against. Another one that we've run into in the past are mechanics liens. Now, basically that is somebody, I'm sure there's other definitions of it, but a homeowner has hired somebody to do a job. Well, that job didn't get done right, and Mr. Seller felt like he doesn't need to pay Mr. Contractor. Well, if there was a contract signed and that contractor can prove that they have done the work and they've done everything right, and the seller just didn't want to pay, they can go down and they can file what's called a mechanics lien, which basically can force payment against, or puts a lien on the title that when that house goes to sell, they can force payment on that. Now, another reason I say it's important to go with a fee attorney is those need to be refiled every 10 years. So you can still get title insurance and the title just says, hey, we are providing title insurance, but this mechanics lien is known and we will not insure if that person comes out of the woodworks to pay on it. Now, we had bought one with a mechanics lien that was 9 years and 11 months old. So we felt pretty safe that this person in 1 month was not going to remember from 10 years ago to refile a $700 mechanics lien. So we went ahead and bought the house with that mechanics lien. And sure enough, by the time we rehabbed and sold the property, mechanics lien was there, but it was outdated. They never refiled and it proved clear title. And so that's another lien you can kind of run into. And a lot of times you can negotiate with these people. If you can get a hold of them, you can just straight tell them if they're going into foreclosure, front and behind, it's like, look, you either settle on $1,000 on your $5,000 lien or you get nothing, because it's going to foreclosure and $1,000 is better than nothing. So don't be afraid to try to negotiate with some of these people to get the information that, or the liens and payoffs that you need, especially on like a mechanics lien that they have every legal right. They're within, well within 10 years. You can get a hold of somebody and just straight tell them, hey, you either take this or you get nothing and the house gets foreclosed on.
So why, if in a foreclosure, do other liens get wiped out?
Because the first lien is usually, or a superior lien is foreclosing. You can't foreclose on a mechanics lien because there's no payment required. So if the first lien, a mortgage, is foreclosing, everything behind it, second, third, mechanics, water softener liens, abstract judgments, they all get wiped out and then no payment is going to be paid to them because that first lien mortgage is going to get paid first. And they're the ones that are actually foreclosing. So that's why it's in their best interest to say, hey, I might not get $5,000, but I'll take $2,000. There's a lot of types of liens you will run into on those properties. Some of the nastiest ones you'll run into are water softener liens. And they are very common, especially in the new neighborhoods, because people will get sold on these water softeners, very slick salesmen. And then after a couple of years or months, they're like, you know what? I don't want to pay this anymore. Go ahead and take it back. They won't come take it back. They won't repo it. They'll just slap a lien against that property, and they do not negotiate. They want paid in full on that lien, plus interest and everything, and they're very sophisticated on how those go. So if you see a water softener, especially when you see a seller's disclosure, you can ask somebody like if they owned or leased that water softener, because if they're not paying on it, I stopped paying on it a while ago, you can bet you're going to find a water softener lien unless the company's gone bankrupt sometime during the... since they got it installed. So that's another type of lien that you can run into.
Well, what do we do to avoid those?
What?
The mechanic liens.
Oh, that's another reason to get, I've heard us talk about it, getting a partial release of liens to where every time we pay a contractor, even if he's got a $10,000 contract on our job and he wants a $1,000 draw, he's signing a partial lien waiver saying that, hey, I've received $1,000. I've paid all my subcontractors. I've paid all my suppliers. Everybody down the chain from him have been paid. So in the event that everything goes south, or say you rob the guy, take $9,000 in labor and refuse to pay him, he can only attach a $9,000 lien, not a $10,000 lien, because you still have that partial release saying that he was paid $1,000. So it's very important to get on any type of contractor is that lien waiver release. With any payment,
and it's a very simple document. I mean, it's one page, has a property address, the amount that you're paying them, their name, your name, a few other lines of crap in there that just says that, you know, that they're getting paid. It's kind of like a form of invoice that they're agreeing to, right? So then they're gonna sign it, date it, and that's pretty much the guarantee that you have. That's like, hey, I paid you X amount of money, so for that amount of money, you can't do anything to the property. You might come after it for the remaining amount, but you can't for that amount.
It's one of those things you hope you never have to have or never have to use, but in the event that you do need to use it, you're going to be very glad that it's in place, because they can go and try to slap a lien against your house, but then you can walk up to Mr. Judge and be like, look, he signed right here that he was paid $10,000 on his $10,000 contract. That $10,000 lien he's trying to put in my house, it doesn't exist. So that's something you're really going to want to have.
Yeah, definitely a pain in the ass, but it's for every project that we do, we have, I don't know, like 34 of those. I mean, because a lot of these contractors, especially when you deal with a lot of subcontractors, it's $500 here, $600 there, and it's just so many little payments. And every time we do one, here's a partial release of lien, because all those $500, they add up. And you don't want to get caught. You know, the biggest thing always keep in mind is that we're a litigious society. In a good market, nobody's complaining. When the market turns, everybody remembers who owes the money. So you don't want to be one of those people that, you know, didn't cover your ass. I'm
trying to think what other type of liens we've run into.
Oh, that Medicare one that we kind of came across.
Yeah, I guess we came across a Medicare to Medicaid lien, and that's something you don't really want to mess with too much, especially IRS liens, tax liens. They're attaching to the person, but we have not come. We've come across a Medicaid lien, but the deal we didn't pursue any further. But it's something that we talked to an attorney, and if they sent out an, it was basically what the situation was: is a brother had died and gave it to would-be seller, and then all of a sudden, the deceased got a letter that was to all the family members from Medicaid saying, letting everyone know, hey, we have a claim against this estate, which basically says all assets are frozen. So this, since this one never went through probate, never had a will, we were going to do an affidavit of heirship, but that person, our seller, had to agree that their property is free of debts and liens. And he could not sign that legally because he knew there was a Medicaid lien out there. And we talked to our attorney about it, and he's like, if you try to close around that and he certifies and signs that affidavit of heirship, you're committing fraud. And Medicaid could really kind of come after you that, and that's a governmental agency. You do not want to mess with those. So you can, while you're going through title, clearing up any issues, dealing with probate and stuff like that, he says we can contact Medicaid and get that cleared up and get that payoff and kind of force their hand, because it can take them a while to get you the document. But if an attorney's contacting them for a title company saying, hey, we need to get this settled, we need to get this taken care of, we need that lien right away, something you can work with.
Yeah, so. And I mean, in that regard, one thing that when we were going through that property, another investor kind of like, yeah, we can have them sign it and, you know, pretend like we didn't know that and all. Don't be an idiot. Don't try to pretend like you're going to be smarter than the system and all this shit, smarter than Medicaid, because they're going to find out and it's going to be a lot worse for you. And typically the deals that you're probably coming across, especially this deal, they're not going to be million-dollar deals. They're not going to be deals that you can go retire if shit goes wrong. Like, they're still not big enough for you to take that kind of risk. So, you know, obey those laws, because they can really come back and bite you in the ass later on.
And another one I just realized is that when I was talking about that water softener lien and why it's good to use good title companies, we had a property. We were buying it, taking it subject to, and we were going to wholesale it. Well, our end buyer had their title company run just a quick preliminary search, and they wound up pulling up a water softener lien against this property. And our title company, we went back to them, and we were really kind of pissed. It's just like, why didn't you guys find this? Like, they found this thing right away. What's going on? Like, why are you guys not seeing these things? It seems like something to be clear as day. And the attorney that ran that office called us, and he's like, hey, I'm going to get the bottom of this. I don't know what happened. Let me call the underwriter to get this figured out, because if that could be potentially a very big issue. So the next day he calls me back, and he says, hey, they missed their deadline. They missed their filing date to refile. It's a lien that it's no good. So that's why they were willing to negotiate and take some money down, because it was like a $5,000 lien, and they were willing to come down $2,500, which is odd. But always ask, you never know who's willing to come down some, but they were willing to cut it in half. And it was very odd that they're willing to do that, but that was the reason, because they knew they had a bogus lien, because they never refiled the lien like they're legally supposed to do, so they had an invalid claim against the property, and that's why the title company that we first ran it through and were closing with never saw the lien, is because they knew the law. And they found it, they saw it, but they realized, hey, you never refiled, you passed your deadline, you're no good. So they didn't even come on our title commitment, because if we would have closed, it would have been nothing to worry about. So they would have been covered, but it's something that's important to know and understand in dealing with a good title company.
And if it's your first couple deals, I mean, really any deal, John, he's the one that's why you hear a lot from him, because he's the one that deals with title. And he reviews all of the title commitments. He reviews all of the HUDs. You gotta make sure that everything is done right, because guess what? Again, going back to working with your title company, there is a chance that they can miss something, right? Or there's a chance that they make something a bigger deal than it really is, and there's something that you can do to fix it. So this is why you need to take an interest in doing this and not essentially being lazy and just handing it off to them and just hoping for the best and say, well, title said it was good. Well, you need to learn these things. I mean, and obviously if you're trying to stay in this for the long run and actually be in business for years to come, because this is when you learn all the strategies and all the things that are going to happen that are going to make you a better investor when the market turns. You understand? Like, you need to develop these habits now. Don't get lazy.
Well, that's the thing, like, why title insurance is important. I've heard people say, like, well, if there's a lien against it, title will cover it. Title will cover it. Hmm. Title will cover up to the purchase price. So if you bought a house for $100,000, say it's a big rehab, we're getting into one right now, is purchased 91, it's got an $80,000 rehab. Title insurance is good for the $91,000 purchase price, saying, hey, up to what you're paying, your title policy is covered by this, and if you don't ask for some extra exemptions and lender policies, you can really be screwed. Because if somebody comes back and makes a claim on that property, because I've heard people, this exactly happened to another investor we knew, where and they kind of seemed like the seller knew what was going on, it was an estate issue, and they kind of forged the documents and lied, saying there wasn't a claim, nobody else could claim against the estate, and they could. But title came back and insured up to the purchase price, but he'd already put $20,000 into this thing. And if you bought that house for $100 and you put $20,000 into that thing, you're in really deep shit right now, because you have a loan on the property, or you borrowed private money, or in our situation, like, hey, we're $60,000 into this property and we did not get those extra title insurance policies, and we could be really in big trouble. But that's why it's working with a good reputable title company to make sure that you get those extra purchases and stuff and you're fully covered. So that's why having these liens and understanding your title company, understanding what these commitments are and the risk you're playing, is a huge benefit to have.
All right. Anything else? Any other liens?
I think that's really it for this episode. I got some other podcasts, I've just scribbled down some ideas that come to my head just from talking with this one. So, or I just to give everyone a little teaser, I want to talk about the appraisal process and properties not appraising, which is a huge problem right now, especially if you get further north into Austin where the prices are higher. Not as big an issue in San Antonio, but have run into it several times in the past year. The difference between intrinsic value versus appraised value, meaning what's an appraiser going to give value for and what is a buyer going to pay for, because they're two very different things, but two very important things to get straight with your property.
And they'll definitely affect your profit immensely.
Exactly. And another one that I've always kind of wanted to do, type a little article on and do a little blog post on Bigger Pockets about, was what's better, notes? Basically, you bought a property and you owner financed somebody, you became the bank and you hold paper or note against that property, or owning the rental property itself. I lean more towards the rental side, but I know a lot of people that will fight me to the death on notes are better than rental property. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to give the kind of opinion on one versus the other, because I think both of them actually have a very important position in a portfolio of rental properties, and they both have their advantages and disadvantages from each other. So some future podcasts there to remember.
Or maybe we just pour another glass of scotch and get another one out.
Record it right now.
Yeah, we might just put the other one out really soon. So keep listening, keep subscribing. If you like what you guys are hearing, leave us a review, share this. The more people that hear us and gets out there, the better it is for everybody. You see that we're just sharing stuff that we've been through. So hopefully this keeps helping you guys. And any questions, feel free to reach out. See you in the next one.